Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show. This is your host, Marcia Carnicelli Minor, and my business partner, Tom Katowski, and myself always love to start out our shows by saying thank you, and thank you again for all of the support throughout these 25-plus years, not only for Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show, but for our Healthy Referral newspaper, which, as most of you know, is our full-size newspaper dedicated to positive news, personal growth, preventive and natural health. And we began in 1989, which is actually hard to believe for us. Time does fly when you're on purpose, and this is what we tell people when they are trying to get in touch with their purpose in life, that when you are following it, time does not even exist. And at one point, we realized that, wow, how many years have gone by. And it is a gift to us to have this time with you throughout these years and at this very present time, because there is so much happening in the world and so many beautiful things that need to be focused on in the midst of all what sometimes we call the crazy stuff. And today is no exception to the weeks that we have done these past 25 years. We have an amazing guest on, and I do not have her mic open just yet because I always like to just share a little bit before we get started. So on that note, if you are wanting to contact the guest with any kinds of questions, we will be giving that number and the web address and email and so forth throughout the interview. So any questions about the subject matter directly, you would go ahead and be in touch with Janet Doman, who is the director, and perhaps other titles I'm not mentioning at the moment. To reach us at the Healthy Referral newspaper and Mind, Your Body, and Spirit Radio Show, you can call 216-533-2273. That's 216-533-2273. And our web address is www.healthyreferral, that's spelled R-E-F-E-R-R-A-L.com. And I always like to say it's not that you don't know how to spell as to why we give you that spelling. It's just because people have a tendency to type it in a little differently and they're not finding the site and they're always asking, you know, where is the site? So know that it's because we just want to make sure that you get directly into the site. The Healthy Referral newspaper is available to anyone who is offering services or products that have to do with well-being in whatever category that may be. And if you want to learn more about how you can actually become a part of the Healthy Referral that is national and touching international, please do let us know on the numbers that you are hearing for us directly. And again, you can go to our website at healthyreferral.com. Okay, the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential was shared with me some years ago, again, time flies, by an awesome friend of mine, Diane Phillips. And when Diane mentioned the Institutes to me, I immediately became interested and began my research into their information and loved every single part of what I was reading. I have raised three awesome children who have been blessed with good health and well-being. And I know the challenges that there can be for parents who do have some challenges with their children in whatever ways that may be. So Janet Doman will be sharing absolutely what I call beautiful information about how the Institutes have been helping parents throughout these past 50 years to support their babies and children to reach their full potential. And as babies and children, as most of you parents listening know, the potential to learn and grow is beyond amazing. And as a parent, we are the most powerful people to help develop and nurture our children's full potential. Please share this interview with your family, your loved ones, and your friends. They will thank you for it. It is absolutely worth every single moment that you'll take during these 30 minutes. The Institute's web address is, let's make sure I get this to you correctly here. It is www.iahp.org. That is, again, iahp.org. The phone number is 215-233-2050. Once again, that's 215-233-2050. And, of course, the email address that you will see on the website, you don't need to take it down now, but you're welcome to do that. It is institutes, that's plural, at iahp.org. And the, again, questions about the subject matter can be directed to Janet after the show, anytime after the show. And what's wonderful about this interview, which is live, is that it's also recorded and available to everyone 24/7. All you have to do is to go into our radio link and go to the archived on-demand shows, listen to it any time that you would like, and you can forward that link to family and loved ones. And I'm going to go ahead and open the mic for Janet. And I always like to make sure here that I'm doing this correctly, and hopefully you are there. Janet, are you there?
I am indeed here.
Hello. It's so great, always. I don't know if you remember our conversations from the past, but again, you know, this has always been.
I certainly do.
Well, that's good to hear. And if we can start out by just sharing, if you would, please. You know, the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential began in what year and by what wonderful man?
Well, we began our work 61 years ago in 1955. The Institutes was founded by my father, Glenn Doman, and he was very much in the saddle right up to the day he left a few years ago in 2013. And many thousands of parents have come from around the world in the last 61 years to learn what they can do for their kids. Our work really, as you've already described it, our work really spans the complete spectrum of children, from children who are at one end perhaps severely brain injured. That's been our primary work for the last 60 years, but that work has led us into also teaching the parents of well children. Back in the 60s, we started to teach our brain-injured children to do things intellectually, and when we saw how bright they were and how capable they were, we had to ask ourselves, gee, what's happening to the well six-year-old across the street while our two-, three-, and four-year-old brain-injured kids are just triumphing and reading and doing math and enjoying themselves so much? What's happening to that well kid who seems to be languishing? And indeed, as you know, even today, 35% to 40% of our youngsters in regular school will fail to learn to read at grade level. So it's still a big, big problem today. So our work really is two big populations, but in fact, they're very related. The world tends to think of well children as being very, very different than brain injured children. But in fact, we really look at our kids on a continuum, starting with that most well kid and going all the way to that kid who may be right now stuck in a coma, struggling to get out of a coma, and every kid in between. So we really like the fact that although we began with the most hurt children, that work has led us to also helping to make the well kids of the world much, much, much better.
And you know, Janet, when I first heard this information and started the research after Diane had shared the information, that this was one of the things that really just jumped out for me was the fact of, absolutely, the fact of, you know, helping the children who are brain injured and seeing such an amazing increase in, you know, just expressing their potential and everything, and the fact that you realize that, gee, what could this do for well children? And that just so struck a note for me for numerous reasons that I won't get into right now. So it just, you know, hit really close to heart that, wow, you know, here all these children who are really, really having difficult issues with injury being helped so much, and then over here, you know, the children that, who are considered well, which, as we know, you know, could still include so many different issues, so many different issues.
Well, you know, the world has really looked at brain growth and development as if it was a static and irrevocable fact, but in fact, brain growth and development is a dynamic process, and it's a process that can be stopped, as it is in the case of severe brain injury. It's a process that can be slowed, as it is in mild brain injury. But most importantly, it's a process that can be speeded. And that's really been our job for the last 61 years, to teach parents that it's all about stimulation and opportunity. Opportunity and stimulation. And, you know, for many of our years, when we would say these things, a good portion of our colleagues across the street would laugh at us and say, well, you're so, the Institute's people, they're so in love with the brain, and they think the brain grows by use, because, of course, the thing that we've been saying for 61 years is the brain grows by use. It literally grows by use.
Yes.
Today, we've lived long enough, so everyone who's listening to this interview knows that the big word of the last decade is neuroplasticity. That's the big new word, and you can't pick up a newspaper or a magazine or watch a television show without somehow stumbling across neuroplasticity. And, of course, if you ask, well, what does it mean, neuroplasticity? It means the brain grows by use. That's what it means.
And your father,
you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, we've lived long enough to finally see that the seeds have been planted, so that this idea of brain growth being dynamic and spectacularly dynamic is now been proven over and over and over again by neurophysiologists, so that now pretty much everybody knows that it's true, that the brain is plastic, and that it isn't that you're born with a certain amount of ability and that's it, there's nothing you can do about it, that there's a great deal we can do about it, and it's very, very, very exciting.
And your father, you know, Glenn Doman, actually was the one who said that phrase, because I do remember it was one of the first things that I picked up when I started looking at your information originally. And when I read that quote by him, I was just like, yes, yes, because it's what I've always believed. And, of course, I believe that, you know, we are amazingly made, and I don't pay attention to anything that shortens the ability in conversation of our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual abilities. So that phrase is definitely one that I appreciated, you know, reading that your dad had come up with about that the brain grows. The Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential serves many, many different parts of the world, which was the other thing that I was so excited about. And the international headquarters is located in Philadelphia, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And there are branches of the Institute in numerous countries. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, we have an institute in Europe. It's located in Italy, in Faulia. We have an institute in Tokyo, and an office in Kobe in Japan. We have mm-hmm. offices in Mexico, and we have had institutes, kind of associated institutes, in Brazil as well, in Rio, in Belém, and in São Paulo.
Mm-hmm. And Janet, let's do somewhat of a mock. For instance, let's say that a parent or mom is listening to this, and this is their first time in hearing anything like this. What do you all suggest for the first step for a mom?
Well, of course, it would vary if it were a mom of a hurt kid or a well kid. But I think for both mothers, the first thing I would recommend is to read one of our books. I think for the mother of a newborn baby, the book How Smart Is Your Baby is virtually a manual, a detailed manual of the first 12 months of life, basically how to stimulate the baby, provide appropriate stimulation at the appropriate time, and the appropriate opportunity that the baby needs to have. And again, I think that book is it's very detailed. It gives mothers, you know, checklists that they can follow. It gives mother a very clear idea of how to evaluate her baby's condition so she can be sure that the baby is neurologically moving at the pace he should be. And it also gives her a battle plan if he is a little slow in an area, how to provide the stimulation he needs to catch up and be where he needs to be. And, of course, the main purpose of the book is to not wait for the accidents to happen of stimulation, but to provide an enriched environment. Let's take something simple like the light reflex. A newborn baby has a very slow light reflex, and that light reflex is going to be developed through stimulation in the first, especially the first 6 to 8 weeks, every time there's bright light and then darkness, bright light and darkness, that light reflex is stimulated. And to the degree it is stimulated, the baby will begin to see, and he'll begin to see outline, and then after outline, he'll begin to see detail, his mother's face, whether she's smiling, whether she's happy, whether she's looking at him. So from the baby's viewpoint, there's probably nothing more important than being able to see as quickly as possible, because when the baby arrives, he's functionally blind. So we can wait for the many accidents of how many times the lights turn on and how many times the lights turn off, or we can actually provide appropriate stimulation as simply as a flashlight with the light turning on and the light turning off, so that that baby can develop much better vision much more rapidly. So instead of being maybe 8 or 9 or 10 weeks living in a world where the baby can barely see outline, the baby begins to be able to see outline and see detail. And that makes a huge difference in the quality of the baby's life. So if you take something very simple like the light reflex, and there are many other things that we can do for the baby by putting him on his belly on the floor so he can move instead of being restricted in his movement. Most American babies today are literally bundled up, wrapped up, kept in devices, put in chairs. They are literally restricted to the degree that I think the last estimate I saw said that the average American baby may spend as little as 3 minutes altogether actually free to move. Now, that's pretty shocking when you think that the baby in utero is completely free to move. Now, he's in a confined area, but he can move his arms, he can move his legs, he can kick, he can do all kinds of things in that aqueous environment. But when he's born, he should have even more freedom, But in the society in which we presently live, that is not what happens. He's often bundled up in the hospital, not once, not twice, not three times. Our local hospital will literally wrap the baby 5 times in blankets. And what must the baby think, by the way? What must he think, having just been in an aqueous environment for 9 months, to come out of that environment and be put on his back, wrapped 5 times, staring at lights that are going to be on for 24 hours, and separated from his mother, not able to smell her, not able to see outline of her, no contact with her except when he's carried to see her, hopefully to be fed. So we have created a bizarre early development for our babies in the modern world, and that book, I think, really opens the young mother's eyes to say, oh my goodness, we got to get back to babies having a chance to be babies, to bond with their mothers, bond with their fathers, and actually have the stimulation and opportunity that they need. And if we do that in the first 12 months of life, that baby by 12 months of age will be totally different than the average baby. He will be very significantly different. And that difference he will maintain through his whole life.
You know, Janet, why do the hospitals do that? Why do they bundle them up like that? I mean, I've had 3 children and, you know, a couple grandchildren, and I've often tried to understand that, and I don't, because as a mother, my instinctiveness was to definitely want to, you know, let them free movement, you know, put them on the floor on the blanket, even a playpen, you know, even though it could be looked at as restricting, it still gives them space to move.
Right. Well, again, I really can't answer your question. I think it's asking sane people to think insanely. Because I think it's an insane environment that we've set up for the baby, and to some degree an inexcusable environment. Knowing what we know, I suspect that it's primarily totally the efficiency and convenience for the caretakers of the babies, because it's just easier for them to deal with kids who are wrapped up in a little ball, who can't move, and who, you know, that's the reality. The idea that they're doing it for the baby's sake, I think, is spurious.
And, you know, I had made so many notes, you know, throughout these months and so forth. In fact, I have the How Smart Is Your Baby book nearby quite frequently, because I share it with people. Just because we are around a lot of potential to share something like this. And one of the things that always stood out, too, and does come out in conversation with people, is the fact that the way that the institutes actually do things is that you work with the parent or the mom to work with the child. It's not that you take this child and you're working with this child yourself, and it's also that the premise is that the mom is working with this child in this way at home, not necessarily, you know, staying, you know, at the institutes all the time, although going and doing certain things at the institutes, of course, is you know, is something that is set up or can be set up. So can you comment on that? Because I think that's something that a mom really goes, wow, you know, because they're so used to things being done differently.
Well, the point you make is hugely important to us. We believe that parents are the answer. They're the answer if we're talking about a severely brain-injured child who maybe have been diagnosed as a cerebral palsy or trisomy 21 or autistic or developmentally delayed. Parents are the answer. Parents are the answer when it comes to the baby. We want to see, you know, Marcia, this will amuse you, but, you know, many, many years ago, someone who didn't like what my father was saying very much said, all Glenn Doman is doing is driving mothers and kids closer together. Well, that's not all we're doing by a long shot. But my father always said, when he read it, he smiled. And he said, put that on my tombstone. That will be my epitaph. I will rest happily.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it may not be all we're doing by a long shot, but if it's the only thing we do, it's surely the most important. When you put mothers and babies back together, you do the single most important thing you can do. When you put fathers and babies back together, you do the single most important thing. When babies are with their parents, they are learning more, pound for pound and ounce for ounce, than they'll learn at any other time. All the evidence shows that the children learn right from wrong, up from down, from mother and father, or they don't learn it at all. All the key lessons in life are learned, but you have to be with your mother. You have to be with your father. You know, I was lecturing in Singapore about a year ago, big, big group, 1,000-plus moms, and, you know, they were this is the home of the tiger mothers. And, you know, I said, I'm here in the home of the tiger mothers, and they all roared with laughter. And I said, and I'm happy to be with tiger mothers because I agree with being a tiger if you're a mother. I think that's a good thing, not a bad thing. But I said, please, tiger mothers, please note that real tiger mothers are very gentle and sweet with their cubs. And all I want from you is to be a little more gentle, a little more sweet. But I said to them, the most important thing is that you give your child your time and your energy. That's the most important thing you could give to your child is your time. And if you don't do that, it doesn't matter how wonderful you are and how much you love them. If you don't give them your time, it won't add up to a hill of beans. And when I got all done, a mother, I always take questions, and a mother at the back stood up and she said, you know, I have spent my whole life fighting to get straight A's in school, to go to the best junior high, to go to the best high school, to go to the best university, to get to the best job. Now I have the best job. And you're telling me that I have to stay home with my 6-month-old baby. And what do you say to that? And I said to her, you know, first of all, I'm not telling you that. Because if you don't want to stay home with your 6-month-old baby, then I don't really think you'll be doing that 6-month-old baby a whole lot of good.
Exactly.
But what I do want to say to you is, she said, you know, how do you speak to women? And I said, no. I'm not speaking for women. We speak for the baby. Someone must speak for the baby. He cannot speak for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's unpopular and if it's politically incorrect, which heaven knows it is, to say that babies need their mothers, somebody must stand up and say it because it is the truth. It is the truth. And those cultures and those societies that put mothers and babies back together and fathers and babies back together, those cultures will persist, and the ones that do not will fail. They will fail.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Janet. You know, a lot of the things that are going on in the world that have to do with separating the family, dismantling the family in some way, shape, or form, you can see, and we can see the issues at hand, because I have been saying also for a very long time that, you know, when you break up in the many different ways that that can happen, the family unit, it does and can have a drastic impact and requires a lot of effort to be on top of things as to, you know, what extra then needs to be done. And I mean, we all have our experiences in life. And, you know, I certainly have my own. You know, I have 3 grown children, 2 grandchildren. And when I had my children, I was ecstatic to be able to be home and able to, you know, be with them, and I wanted to be with them. It was like, I could not have done it any other way. So I know that we are and have been going through a very crucial experience. And, you know, I was also given an opportunity to see the different sides because of a divorce that happened when my children were young. So it's a very interesting piece of subject matter, and it's a very, very vital and crucial one. So, and, you know, there was something that I read also in the Institute's information that I felt was really, really great, because sometimes this can get lost in the shuffle in talking about, you know, parents or mother. And I want listeners to realize that we are talking about parents. We're not leaving out the father. And
no.
That in the conversation, sometimes, you know, it can be misconstrued. And so I think it would be great just for you to elaborate a little bit on the whole using of different terms and the fathers.
Well, you know, when we started to give our course, How to Multiply Your Baby's Intelligence, back in 1978, and we've been giving it continuously ever since, one of the things that surprised us right off the bat is that 30% of the parents enrolling in that course were fathers. And they weren't fathers who were pushed into the room by mothers. They were the ones leading the way. And that has always been true in that course. Fathers are changing. Fathers are not the same as they were 50 years ago. Fathers want to be part of their kids' lives. And
yeah.
They don't want to wait till their kids are 20 years old. They want to be right there at the start. And that's very exciting to us because we see our fathers. We see fathers do things with their children that mothers don't do. You know,
absolutely.
There's a reason we have fathers and mothers. They're not the same. They don't do the same thing. I believe, for example, that fathers are wonderful with babies. But we live in a society, especially in America, where fathers are barely allowed to touch the baby. If you watch a group of women, the father will say, give me the baby, and then all the women in the room look as if he's going to drop the baby or break the baby, and he's allowed to hold the baby for a few seconds, and then it will give me the baby back. You know, it's as if we've given the baby to a gorilla or something. And the fact of the matter is, when we leave dad alone with the baby, he will do things physically that we don't do that the baby needs. He will do things intellectually that we don't do. He will play with the baby in ways that we do not. And we find that boys are the same way. They will do things with a baby that little girls will not do. Little girls imitate their mothers. And pretty much little girls try to control the baby. But little boys and men play with the baby. And that's what the baby wants. So, you know, we really ought to let our fathers in on the magic of the baby, because he will do things that mother will not do, and the baby adores it. And as that baby gets to be not a baby anymore, 3 or 4 or 5, dads are much better at problem solving with the kids than mothers are. Mothers are great at nurturing, providing information, but because that's what we do. That's what we're thinking way is to take care, to protect, to nurture. But father's thinking way is different. And he's the one who will say to mother many times a day, don't do that for him. He's not a baby. Let him do that himself. And this comes from, I believe, a deep respect that fathers have for children that we women to some degree do not have. We want to baby them. We want them to stay to some degree a little dependent. But dad says, let him grow up, let him grow up, let him grow up. And dad is right. I'd like to point out to anyone who doesn't know this, Leonardo da Vinci, surely, arguably, the greatest genius who ever lived, was raised by his father and his grandfather.
Wow.
By his father and his grandfather. Now, there's a little boy that from his earliest moments, when he said, Dad, put my socks on, he had somebody saying, I think you can put them on yourself. Why don't you try? And I think it worked out well for him. I think if I were a male, I'd be touting Leonardo da Vinci in a big, big, big way. I'd be saying he's a product of us because he was. And I think there's a big lesson to be learned there because when it comes to problem solving, dads are the best. Dads are the best. No one touches
them.
You know,
it's so great. It's so great to hear this, and this is what I wanted to, you know, to have you bring out, because there can be an energy of that the father has been, you know, a lost art in the sense of, you know, what that can mean, and it's really so far from the truth that it possibly can be. And I'm chuckling too, Janet, because there have been some things recently that I have been around to actually see some of what you're saying. And I remember when I was raising my children, you know, perhaps this is a little bit more of an exception to the rule, but I had such a strong energy of wanting, you know, my children to be independent. And of course, as a mother, that nurturing was there, but there was definitely a balance there. And then of course they did have their dad around for quite a number of initial years, but I saw how proud a little one, and I'm talking about, oh, I don't know, maybe 19 months old, when I would have my children help with things like cleaning out their dresser drawers and,
right.
You know, picking out their own clothes.
Right.
Something that can be, appear to be so small, and I can see how easy it is for, because I have watched this, a mom to get in the habit of choosing everything for their child, you know, from the clothes that they put on. I mean, it's okay to, and great, I think, to suggest, how about this, and have choices for them, but not always doing it for them. They have no ability then to, I mean, it'll still happen because that's
right.
Our innateness. But so anyway, I love when these topics come up like this, and we have an opportunity to share, you know, with the listeners. And listeners, I want to again say that we are talking with Janet Doman, who is the director of the Institute for the Achievement of Human Potential. And it's an amazing, amazing opportunity for you and your family and loved ones and just acquaintances for you to share this information. So I would like once again to mention that the web address is www.iahp.org. Again, that's iahp.org, which of course stands for the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. And Janet, I hope I'm correct in saying that you are considered the director, and if there's more to that you feel should be added, please do. I don't mean to leave anything out, but I just know that you are the director. And is there anything I'd like right now actually to anything about yourself that you feel you'd like to share, and also about your dad, because I know when Diane had originally shared this with me, of course your dad was still alive, and I did have the opportunity to chat with him very briefly, which was really great. And I just want to give you an opportunity to say anything around that as far as yourself goes and your father.
Well, I appreciate that opportunity because I'm not often asked to do that. You know, I am beyond any shadow of doubt the luckiest person in the world because I was born into my father's work. We moved to the Institutes when I was five, and I lived there, I was raised there, So from my youngest time, I was first surrounded by stroke patients because we had the first rehabilitation center in the state of Pennsylvania. So I grew up with 60, 70, and 80-year-old stroke patients who lived right there on the campus and who my father and his team and my mother, who was the head nurse, who they treated. And it was from that work that they realized, my goodness, if you can get a 70-year-old back on his feet and functioning again, why are we allowing 3-year-old brain injured kids to be institutionalized for life? And that was when he shifted his attention to hurt kids. And I had the great privilege to watch that work grow from its earliest time. And I have to say, it has been an absolutely spectacular journey when I think that my father really began with one very, very hurt child who, when he saw that child who was paralyzed and speechless, and he looked at that child and said, this child is literally trapped in a prison the exact size of his own body because he can't move an inch, he can't breathe very well, he can't speak, he can't use his hands, and that so horrified him that he spent his whole life looking for solutions to that kid and finding many, 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 by the way. But along the way, the gift that he was really given for that child, to put it mildly, no one cared about brain-injured children. My father and Temple Faye started their work together. Nobody was doing anything with brain-injured kids. They were simply being warehoused, medicated, and forgotten. And to some degree, they still are around the world. In those days, no one was doing anything. And so they became the champion of brain-injured children. And I think the gift that Father got for that kind of heroic, almost Don Quixote level of pursuit, I think what he got as a tremendous gift was that along the way, he had to study the well child. There was no way to fix a brain-injured child without knowing a huge amount about the development of the well child. And as he studied the development of the well child, of course, he then ended up with a tremendous program to stimulate and provide opportunity for the well child. So really, he was given that whole field as a gift because he chose the most hurt kid in the room. He got everybody. And I think he was smart enough to know what a gift that was, that was such a huge present. And, you know, if I had to summarize my father in one word, it would have to be the word yes. Because my father loved to say yes, and he hated to say no. So when a parent brought a blind, deaf, paralyzed child through the door and said, can you help us? My father always said yes. Yes, yes, we're going to try. We're going to fight the good fight for as long as you want to do it to see if we can't get this kid well. And to be part of that team as a kid and to be permitted to be part of the team, because my father was very, very cunning. He looked exactly like Santa Claus. Anyone who knew my father,
I know
he looked just like Santa Claus. And you know, he was about as close to being Santa Claus as anyone you'd ever want to meet. On Halloween, you know, we could walk into a restaurant that was everyone was in costume, and all we'd have to do was put a Santa Claus hat on my father, and everyone he wins. He wins the prize. Because he was the person. But, you know, he was a cunning Santa Claus. And when we were little, I have an older brother and a younger brother, he made a law. He said, you can be with me no matter what I'm doing, no matter where I am. You may be right by my side. Just, you've got to be there. You can't interrupt. You can't disrupt. But you could be any place I am. If I'm in a board meeting, you can be there. If I'm lecturing, you can sit in the back of the room. If I'm seeing a family, you can sit down and listen to what we're doing. And, you know, he risked a little bit of disruption in in giving us that privilege. But he was always looking for the big prize, which was for his kids to fall in love with brain-injured kids. And, you know, two of the three of us have spent our whole lives. My baby brother, Douglas, works side by side with me every single day. And two out of three isn't bad. My older brother is a judge, and he helps us anytime we need help. But, you know, it's been a wonderful, wonderful life. I could not ask. I wouldn't change one minute. I couldn't ask for a better teacher than my father. He was just one heck of a guy. And to fight the good fight side by side with him from the time I was very little, you know, when I was 8 years old, we had a big snowstorm in Pennsylvania, and the staff couldn't make it to work. 23 inches, that was a lot for us. Mm. And when he had recruited the guys on the tractors coming down the road and taking the whole kitchen staff and said, you're going to help, he still didn't have enough hands to treat the kids. And he said to me, you know, you're going to help. And I can remember that as if it were yesterday. And you know how kids are. I was 8 years old. I said to myself, oh, I'm a staff member now. You know, and now I get to be a staff member. And I never looked back. He never got rid of me. You know, but that was a wonderful thing to do for me. That was a wonderful thing to do for me because he allowed me to be part of a life-saving team who got up every day to fight the good fight to save a hurt kid. And there just isn't any work better in the whole world. And I have a wonderful team of staff, as Di knows, because she's been part of that team. And yes, they just couldn't be – they are just first-rate human beings. So that's a very long answer to your question.
Oh, no, that's absolutely perfect. That's what I wanted. I wanted you just to share. And your father, when he passed on, was, what was he, 94?
He was 93.
93.
And almost 94. And, you know, when he headed off for his next adventure, and I have not the slightest doubt that wherever he is right now, he's up to something good. you know, I have to say, around the world, and it was absolutely wonderful. And, you know, when families came back, of course they were upset. Of course they were, you know, to some degree devastated not to have him there. But they looked around and they said, well, but everybody's happy. Everybody's nobody's sad. Nobody. And we said, how can you be sad about my father? There just wasn't anything about my father that was sad. You couldn't, you know, if you walked into his office and you had a frown on your face, he would immediately say, what's wrong? And then he would immediately say, well, we got to fix that right now. Because in his face, everyone had to be happy. And that's just who he was. So there was no, we couldn't have a memorial. That would have been miserable. If we had had that, he would have come back as the most ferocious ghost.
Right.
You know.
Celebration.
So we had to have a very happy celebration, which we did.
Yes.
And to say the truth, my father taught us very well. He taught us exactly what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and why to do it. And we know how to carry on. And that's exactly what we're doing. And we don't give up. We'll never give up. It's who we are, and it doesn't matter how crazy the world gets. We're a big team of people, and we have the best job in the world.
And I do want to say that there is a quote by him about your mom in the very beginning of the book, where he says, for my wife, Katie, and he gives a, in fact, I do have it here. I'd like to just share it. Let me just do that. Hold on one second here. Because I think that this is appropriate as well. For my wife, Katie Massingham Doman, I hope I pronounced that right, who has lovingly taught thousands of mothers the world over how to teach their babies and will continue to do so through this book. For as long as there are mothers who want to teach who want to teach and babies who want to learn. And I thought that was a wonderful message that he, you know, put in the very front of the How Smart Is Your Baby book. So I did want to make sure that we mentioned your mom because I definitely have this knowing that behind every man there is a woman, and behind every woman there is a man. So,
absolutely. Well, certainly my mother has been a big, big, big part of my father's life. And absolutely, they did a good job choosing each other.
Yes, awesome. Well, Janet, this has been wonderful. And listeners, as we have said throughout, what we would love for you to do is to make the connection with the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential with Janet Doman, who is the director. And as you heard, her father, Glenn Doman, is the one who started the Institutes many, many years ago. So please take a moment and go to the website, which you've heard mentioned, www.iahp.org. Janet, they can get all that their information from the site, but I have the phone number right here. Is the phone number good to give out, or should we just leave the...
Sure, absolutely. We always have a real live human being on our switchboard from 9 to 5, and we think that's very, very important. So, yes, the phone number, you'll get an actual live living human being.
Awesome. Well, that's 215-233-2050, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and once again, listeners, it's 215-233-2050. And give a call. You can also email through the website. You will see that, but the email address is simply institutes, and that's plural. So it's INSTITUTES at IAHP.org. And Janet, as always, you know, there are, as you've heard this saying numerous times in life, you know, we meet people who stay for just a very brief moment. We meet people who stay a little longer, and we meet people who end up staying forever. And I feel that the message that you all at the Institutes continue to communicate is one that is a forever energy. And the fact that it brought Diane and I, you know, together, who, by the way, was actually introduced to me by another friend who actually met Diane first and knew that she wanted for Diane and I to connect. And that is what started this whole thing rolling. And again, having the books in my hand and being able to share, because I mean, I have my own situations that I have felt very strongly that this information could, you know, be of benefit, and we'll continue to do that, not only through family, but you know, through acquaintances and so forth. And also, you may remember that I make a couple trips to Italy a year because I am 100% Italian. And I do have a plan to head out more than likely the very end of September, beginning of October. And, you know, would love to have something set up where I know that there's not always things going on in Italy at the center, but at the same time, you know, I could visit and, you know, make a connection to it while I'm there.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. It's in Tuscany, and it couldn't be a more beautiful spot. So let's, you know, I will certainly have our people arrange for you to go and visit, because it's just a beautiful spot.
Absolutely, absolutely. And my families on both sides are from that whole Tuscany area. So it's
well, you're lucky.
I have four sisters and a brother, and we all, you know, do our best to make it there because we do have relatives. And one actually is a padre in a monastery there.
Wow.
In fact, he speaks very little English, so it's always an opportunity for us because, you know, we know some Italian, but for some reason we just did not have, I guess, the what we needed around or the time or something for us to be fluent Italian-speaking people. But, you know, we're all trying. We're all
like
trying.
No time like the present.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. Well, Janet, thank you so much again. And I'm going to send this link so that you all can share it if you choose to do that. It will be, of course, up on our Blog Talk site ongoing on the demand section that people will be able to go in and pull up anytime they choose to do that. So thank you, and thanks,
Absolutely.
Diane, again.
Wonderful.
I will be talking with her, of course, and thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Marcia, thank you so much, and thank you for all the things you've done in the last quarter of a century, because I know you've worked hard and you've done many wonderful things. So I really look forward to you having a chance to come and see the institutes in Italy because, you know, I think you're a native to that area, so you know how
yes.
beautiful it is, but... The Institutes is in a particularly beautiful spot.
Absolutely,
so
and I'm going to have to drag Diane with me. Not that I'd have to drag her.
No, she knows the area, and she'll be a very happy participant.
I'm sure. Okay, dear. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you very, very soon, and I'll send this off to you. Okay.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, dear. Bye-bye.